Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. A pair of series launching sophomore season runs this week are in our spotlight this afternoon. At the stroke of midnight Wednesday, Adult Swim unspooled season 2 of Teenage Euthanasia. Co-creators Lisa Nutting and Allison Levy join me next. One of 2022's sleeper comedies returns to Hulu Friday. This Fool is a Family Affair. Chris Estrada is star, creator, and executive producer. Sister Rocio Estrada is the lead costume designer. And Sister Rocio comes by next half hour. Also ahead, Peacock at the halfway mark of 2023, count Comcast out of the ESPN strategic partner sweepstakes, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Odyssey, Zencaster, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, we're in a heat wave, and tomorrow will be televised. 95 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York on this Thursday afternoon. Wherever you are, heat wave or not, we welcome you to the program all about TV's current and future. If you're in a heat wave, take it easy. If you have to go out, go slow, get hydrated, drink plenty of fluids, look after the loved ones, and stay with us here at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker and TuneIn Radio. We will keep you company, and we will definitely entertain you. We've got some wonderful guests coming away over the next hour, for example, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, and when you do, use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. Chat room is open as well, another way to be involved in the program. It's SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn screen. Follow those instructions. Love to be live with you. The dynamic duo behind Teenagers in Aid on Adult Swim will join us live from Los Angeles and here in Nueva York after these news notes. Peacock completed the first half of 2023 with more than 24 million customers. That's up 2 million customers plus 3 months earlier. NBC Universal's mega content service made $820 million in revenue from April to June while reducing its quarterly operating loss from $704 million at the end of March to $651 million over the past 3 months. New NBC Universal parent Comcast projected strong ad sales for Peacock the rest of this year during an investor analyst call this morning. Also on the call, Comcast President Mike Cavanaugh labeled the stakes by, or I should say the strikes by actors and writers guilds a near-term challenge. That's his word. Maintained the company is committed to constructing a fair deal to all parties as soon as possible. Scratch NBC Universal parent Comcast off the list of organizations bent on being a strategic partner for ESPN. Quote, that's very improbable, unquote, advised Comcast President Mike Cavanaugh on his company's earnings call this morning we just talked about. Rationale for nixing such an arrangement, taxes and shareholder deal structure. At a CNBC event yesterday, ESPN chief Jimmy Pitaro confirmed strategic partner conversations are happening without mentioning names, including the possibility of having deals with the National Football League, Major League Baseball, and the National Basketball Association. CNN leads the parade of contenders for News and Documentary Emmy Awards this year. CNN collected 45 nominations, followed by Vice with 30, and ABC tied with PBS at 26 nominations each. For the first time ever, there will be two presentations, one for news category September 27th, the other the next day for documentary. Both will happen at the Palladium Times Square here in New York and carried on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, and other smart TV products. Now some quickies. The Righteous Gemstones will shine on HBO for a fourth season. Prolific episodic TV writer Jerome Coopersmith has passed away at the age of 97. Among his credits, over 30 episodes of Hawaii Five-O and the short-lived series on CBS, The Android Targets, produced here in New York in 1977. He also was a book writer for Broadway musicals in the 1960s, such as the Sherlock Holmes theme Baker Street and the musical trilogy in one act, The Apple Tree. And former Bachelor contestant Clayton Eckard has a new gig, hosting Pickleball Paddle Battle. That's a competition series starting later this fall. Where it will run will be announced soon. And that is news notes for today. When TV became a player in original series animation in the 1950s and 60s, very few women were involved. If they were, they were sort of ink, paint, coloring, all that kind of stuff, never in the actual animation producing, creating, and writing programs. That started to change in the 1970s when you had overseers like Margaret Loesch for Hanna-Barbera and Gene McCurdy for Warner Brothers. And then in the early 1990s, Nickelodeon had their trio of award-winning Nicktoons premiere. Doug, Rugrats, and The Ren and Stimpy Show. All three of them had women producers. Melanie Grisanti on Doug, Arlene Klasky with her then-husband Gabriel Cusco, who did and created Rugrats and produced Rugrats, and Christine Dakin for The Ren and Stimpy Show under John Kirkpalusi. Now there are many more people who are producing, writing, and animating their own television series who are women. And you're about to meet two of them. There are two who are now doing the Adult Swim series Teenage Euthanasia out of New York and Los Angeles. The second season of the series premiered this past Wednesday at the stroke of midnight. Joining me here in Los Angeles and in New York, the co-creators of the series, Alyssa Nutting in L.A. and Allison Levy in New York. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you
for having us.
Yeah, great to be here.
First of all, have any of you gotten any news from the Adult Swim crowd about how One Day In your show is doing in season two?
Not so much yet. We did a bunch of press that people seem to be excited about, but we haven't talked to them yet. Hopefully they're
I woke up at 5 a.m. to see if it was on Max yet, and it wasn't yet then, but when I woke back up a few hours later, it was.
Doug Northwest Media, by the way, one of our popular chat room people, just gave us a thumbs up in the chat room. Thanks for coming along. You had a question, put it in the room and make the call, 646-652-2906. And all the rest of you, get in there. Sooner you do, sooner we hear from you. Alyssa, I'll start with you. How did you two meet to put this series together in the first place?
Well, Allison had done quite a few shows for Adult Swim, and she really wanted to do a show that centered around, a female teenage girl, but we really wanted to kind of, do a half-hour animation show for, the weirdos, in particular the weird girls, but I think, weirdos of all genders, the show is for you. We really just sort of wanted to tell kind of like the stories that we hadn't seen told about female characters in particular. So she read one of my short stories and reached out to me, and the rest is her story.
And Allison, how about you? How long have you been involved with Adult Swim, and when did you hear about what Allison was thinking about?
So we made our first – I work with a group called PFR. We made a show called Wonder Chosen for MTV, and then in the early 2000s. And then we made a whole series of shows for Adult Swim starting in 2007. So almost 20 years working with Adult Swim. And I just had – I had worked with a lot of different people and created a number of series, and then – I just knew this whole half-hour animated show just seemed like such a hard show to crack and really make successful, and I just was waiting and looking for the right person, and then, as soon as I read what Alyssa was doing, I just knew that her and my sort of mind meld would produce something I hadn't quite seen before and was, hoping to get on the air.
You know, Allison, a lot of people still remember Wonder Chosen and the great run it had. Do people still ask you on the street about that series and give you memories about how fondly they enjoyed it?
I'd say not necessarily on the streets, but yes, we definitely hear from a lot of people. We've never really been in anything, so we're quite anonymous. But yes, and especially younger comedians. And I feel like it runs through now the next show we made, Xavier, Renegade Angel, seems to have also hit another whole group of young people who ended up becoming comedians. We seem to have infiltrated a lot of people's childhood subconscious and turned them on to whatever we're all about.
Alyssa, when you were forming this series, how much of it did you cap from your own teenage years?
Well, definitely, the pain and loneliness was channeled into our very broken Annie, her name's Euthanasia. Trophy, her mother's name is Trophy. She was a trophy wife. who committed suicide when her husband left her for an even younger sugar baby. And her corpse was sent back to the family funeral home called Tender Endings, where Annie, who, you know, was now a teenager, you know, kind of like received the body for burial, and through kind of like the magic of, you know, an orphan's earnest tears and lightning and the grandmother Baba's homemade embalming fluid, Trophy was reanimated. You know, so now the two of them kind of have a second chance. You know, and I can say sort of the template, you know, that sort of I lived, that, you know, I think we see kind of like in the show, is definitely just sort of like this feeling of, you know, being different than your peers, not feeling like you're really what the world wants, in terms of like, you know, as a teenage female, as a person, you know, just that sort of like you really are not the ideal mold. And also feeling, you know, kind of a bit of disappointment about the relationship that you have with your mother, and wondering why you and your mother can't be close, like, you know, maybe some of, you know, the relationships you see with your friends and their mothers.
Mm-hmm. Adult Swim brought back Teenage Euthanasia yesterday. It is on Wednesdays at midnight, at the stroke of midnight, now in season two. You can also catch it on the Rebound on Max, available on smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles. We've got the co-creators of the series, Liz Nutting from Los Angeles, Allison Levy here in the Big Apple this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. We're happy to have you with us, too. Simon App, I'm with you live from New York. On a Thursday afternoon, it looks like we're going to have the start of a heat wave. We've been waiting for it for so long this summer here in New NYC, and we've got it right now, 95 degrees at the top of the hour. Let's hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name, our very good friend, Duck Northwest Media, already in the room. Got another episode for you, our third of the week coming your way tomorrow. And if you have ever been dealing with telemarketing, particularly people trying to scam you, you will not want to miss our first segment tomorrow. My first guest is a former telemarketer, and he is also the co-director and the co-subject of a new HBO documentary miniseries called Telemarketers. His name is Sam Litman Stern. Wait till you hear him. And again, if you have ever been dealing with telemarketing scams, or know people who do, have them listen in. You will be really amazed by what Sam and his colleague have dreamed up and turned up in this very interesting HBO documentary miniseries, three-parter that premieres next month. And that's just our first guest. We'll also have the people behind a new Toon animation studio called Toonstar, which is trying to be cutting edge and doing some interesting shows for television at Web3. The co-founders are John Ananasio and Luisa Wang, and you'll hear both of them, along with our telemarketing person, tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Smart Be Televised. And next Monday, my lead guest will be Ellie Treatman, the executive producer and showrunner of the popular freeform series Cruel Summer, that wraps up season two Monday night. That's all coming your way tomorrow and Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Allison, once both of you got the idea down, how did you decide to make it a futuristic, dystopian, really off-the-beaten-path series?
I think it just felt very natural because we knew we wanted to lean into a bunch of sci-fi kind of stuff, and then we always knew the show would be set in Florida. Alyssa's from Florida, and all of her other things she's written are set in Florida. And it just, the dystopian, it already kind of has that as its default setting. And then for the futuristic part, it just, we wanted it to sort of be able to lean into technology and sort of what places will get left behind with technology, as opposed to like if you live in Hong Kong or New York, just sort of what gets left and how, you know, sort of pointless and detrimental sort of most of the technology is that they have forced to sort of deal with.
Mm-hmm. Alyssa, it's one thing to write for a newspaper, as you do for the New York Times, the editor choice section. What kind of transition did you have to make to write for an animated series?
Well, so I was actually a creative writing professor kind of back in my former life, So, you know, yeah, was kind of writing a lot for print and, you know, books and newspaper. And I think, you know, kind of one thing that really strikes you, I mean, first, sort of like you learn the format. I knew I wanted to transition into film and TV. So, you know, that was kind of one of the first things I started doing was, you know, reading like a lot of scripts of shows I liked, movies I liked, you know, and teaching myself the format. But I think kind of like attention is one thing that really kind of becomes foremost in novels, especially. You can kind of have like a slow burn, you know, and a gentle introduction. It's different, you know, when you're trying to grab the viewer and making sure that they don't change the channel. And, you know, you want exciting things to happen. You know, kind of constantly, but I think that especially with fiction writing, kind of like that allowance of imagination really lends itself well to switching over into animation in particular, because truly anything can happen, you know, which isn't always the same for live action, for example.
Mm-hmm. Allison, which one of you came up with the idea to call this group a fantasy family?
I think that was Alyssa, because I think there was we haven't really even gotten, you know, so they run a funeral home, mm-hmm. the family, that they're centered in a funeral home. And we had this original idea, which we've only gotten to deal with actually a little bit, and maybe when we do other seasons we'll get more into it, is that they sort of perform fantasy-like funerals or funerals that are very custom and, you know, and so that was sort of an idea. That sort of hasn't had a chance to really get in there yet, but I don't know. It just seemed like such a silly and dumb name for an animated family, and their names are all kind of ridiculous, and I don't know. Just makes us laugh.
Yeah, Trophy in particular, you know, just kind of like Trophy fantasy, you know, her whole sort of like dream for life, you know, was like based on the fantasy of I'm just going to like go out and marry a rich guy and, you know, be young forever and everything's going to be fine, which is not actually true for her.
Mm-hmm. When both of you were casting the voices for your series, what were you picturing as people that would fit the role, and how did you ultimately come out with people like Maria Bamford and Bebe Neuwirth or Joe Firestone, Tim Robinson, to ultimately be those voices, to be really the voice of your series?
You know, we started with kind of Joe Firestone, who's Euthanasia, mm-hmm. Annie Fantasy. We knew her, and she was a writer on the show, and she just has an amazing voice and hadn't, for some, you know, really been cast in something. And we were looking for people who hadn't sort of had a starring part in an animated show before. And, you know, she just fit Annie just absolutely perfectly. And then it was like a slow process. Like, I think for Trophy, we were just looking for someone who could just do such a range. And mm-hmm. Maria just came at it. She has such a sensitivity to both the kind of, you know, mental illness of the character as well as the comedy and insanity of Trophy. And you just never know what Maria's do. She's one of the best voice actors going. I think she's incredible. And then with Baba, who Bebe plays, she was one of the last people we wanted to, that we, you know, found to round them out. And it was just also to kind of round out the female voices. And as soon as she wanted to do it, and we were so excited, and she really worked on the kind of accent of the part, and she really makes sure Baba is really grounded and sort of keeps consistent to her own agenda. And then, you know, we needed a man, and I had just had a friend who knew Tim Robinson, and I had just heard him, and I hadn't, at that point, he hadn't done any other animated things, and I just thought his voice was so special, and he had both the kind of sensitivity, but also this like burning fury underneath it that he can bring to Pete. And I don't know, we're just so lucky that they're a part of the show and they contribute so much to the comedy of the show.
Mm-hmm. And for both of you, what was it like, you know, having Bebe Neuwirth on? I mean, this is a woman who has had an incredible career. For years, she was the toast of Broadway, triple threat, senior singer, dancer, actress. Then the big breakthrough in television on Cheers for so many years. Then she, at one point, she was in her own Law & Order series, Trial by Jury. Then Madam Secretary, which had a great run on CBS. And now, voila, you have her for your series.
You can tell, I mean, just from, you know, the second kind of her mouth opens, like, she is an actor of the absolute highest caliber. It's absolutely incredible, just sort of like the you know, intensity and the thought and the focus that she brings to absolutely everything that she does. And I think, you know, that's part of what makes her, you know, absolutely so fantastic. I think, you know, some actors, you know, kind of would, you know, perhaps sort of like look down slightly, you know, on animation or feel like, oh, you know, this is something like I don't need to bring my A game for, you know, or like fully go in. And we're so lucky, you know, and that all of our actors, I think, really, you know, understand like the power of animation as a medium and, you know, really love it. And, you know, BB to have like that level, you know, of, you know, just kind of like dramaturgical, you know, genius coming at your program. She knows, you know, the character in some ways better than we do. You know, she's like always tweaking lines. If Baba actually would say it like this, you know, and she's always right. You know, she really kind of helped all of our actors, truly, really helped, you know, mutually illuminate these four main characters for us. But yes, I mean, it's truly like, you know, it immediately, like you are in the presence of, you know, acting royalty the second she's in the room.
Mm-hmm. Allison Nutting and Alyssa Nutting and Allison Levy, Alyssa Nutting and Allison Levy. Wow. A&A. They are guests this half hour in Amavi Televised, and they are the co-creators of the popular Adult Swim series, Teenage Euthanasia. That's a little bit of a tongue twister, I got to tell you. Teenage Euthanasia, which started season two last night. It's on Wednesdays at midnight on Adult Swim on cable and satellite, and then the next day on Max, the mega content service that's available from Warner Bros. Discovery on your smart TV set, smart device, or multi-channel bundles. Alyssa from Los Angeles, Allison from New York, yours truly also from New York. Happy to have you with us this Thursday afternoon. First day of what we expect will be a three-day heat wave here in the Big Apple. We're now around 95 degrees coming toward the bottom of the hour. We're supposed to be around 96, 97 tomorrow, then back to 90 on Saturday, and then we cool down and get the humidity out of the way on Sunday for hopefully a great week ahead. And if you'd like to get involved with the conversation before we wrap this up at the bottom of the hour, do so. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. 1 week from Monday, we'll be marking our 16th anniversary on the year and plunging into year 17. And as we did a year ago, we will have two executive guests on the program in a two-hour edition, one guest each hour for the full hour. Our first guest for the 3 to 4 p.m. hour, that's Eastern time, noon to 1 p.m. Pacific, will be Brad Schwartz, the former vice president of CW, former head of Pop TV. And we hope to have the second guest announced for you, hopefully by Monday. So that's a week from Monday, August 7th, our anniversary episode, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern, noon to 2 p.m. Pacific, exclusively here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker into Radio, here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Alyssa, what was the game plan for both of you in terms of the sophomore year? How did you want to develop the characters from year one?
Well, one thing, because we have such strong actors, we really, we switched kind of from, you know, we switched over to the animation style of Harmony, using kind of Harmony to animate it, which really allows sort of like facial expressions and acting. I think that, you know, our show puts a lot on the acting of the character, perhaps more so than a lot of animated shows. So that was one thing that we did. You know, we also got to expand the world a lot and have like incredible guest star characters. You know, like this season, we just have so many, you know, amazing like A-list guest stars who are able to come on the program because we're just kind of able to, now that we know the characters, you know, really sort of like get into the world of Ford Gator and play around.
And also, was this a case in the guest stars of you calling them, or more importantly, they calling you because, hey, I saw your show in Adult Swim, or hey, I like Adult Swim, I've got to get on?
I think it was a mixture. I think, you know, we sort of came into the season with a list of, like, you know, people we were excited to work with, like, you know, we had all just watched Succession before we started. So I was like, Kieran Culkin and Jay Smith Cameron, I would love to work with them. And then as we wrote the season, we were like, oh, this would be perfect park for him or her. And, you know, Rachel Sennett, Jinx Monsoon, Ben Platt, just like a whole bunch of people that we were just excited to work with. And as the scripts formed, we mostly just reached out to people with specific offers of, you know, we think this part's for you. Sophia Bush plays a teratoma that Annie grows on her abdomen. That's an old country curse. And, you know, I had met Sophia Bush and just she had such an incredible voice. I just knew we had to find the absolute perfect role for her this season. And, you know, she had obviously never been asked to play a teratoma and was extremely excited to do so.
That was the Sophia is, of course, the actress from Chicago PD. She has been headlined her own CBS. I think we have the executive producer of that CBS series. It was a year or two ago on our program. And now, voila, she is now into the world of tunes.
Yes, she's a great voice actor. I don't think she'd done too much of it going in. She's a very busy actress, but I don't think she'd done that. And she has an amazing voice and was so game and just totally went for it later in the season.
I mentioned in the lead that 30 years ago, we finally started to see women as producers, as creators, as directors, as animators, key animators of toon shows, given what Nickelodeon pioneered with Doug and Rugrats and the Ren and Stimpy show. What does the animation scene like for both of you now in terms of women, in terms of really being, you know, hands-on with the animation as writers, as producers, as directors, and so on?
We definitely can use more. You know, creators in particular, and, you know, especially sort of in the world of adult animation, you know, it's when we first entered into development with the show, we were the only female creators at Adult Swim. Is that correct, Allison, of an animated show?
That is correct. I think there still is no other, except for me. I had done one earlier, but yes, there were no other at Adult Swim. And there had been none that actually had come out yet because it was probably while Tuca and Birdie was being developed at the same time as us. And I think that was the, you know, one of the first ones that had ever really come out. So we were right on the heels of that. And yeah,
among our guests, Louisa Wang, who is the co-founder of this new, very cutting edge studio, Toonstar. They do some very interesting things with Web3, but also move on smart TV sets and devices. And in fact, they announced a project which will also include an artificial intelligence-powered video game that may show up on smart TV sets and devices. So it'll be interesting to hear what Luis has to say about being part of an animation studio from the start. For both of you, how far do you want to take your series? How many more seasons do you see?
Oh, at least 10.
Yeah, until the grave. I think we're pretty content to keep making this show, and we're very young women. But when, you know, I think, you know, until we're done, I think we could keep going. It's a very fun show to make, it feels like it's just easy to write, and, you know, we feel like we have 1,000 more stories to tell about these guys.
It's a real party.
So you've already got the Bible down for season 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and on and on and on.
Absolutely. For sure.
Adult Swim brings you Teenage Euthanasia Wednesdays at the stroke of midnight. And if you can't catch up and stay late to see it, you can catch it the next day on Max, the mega content service from Paramount Warner Bros. Discovery that's available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. More details about Adult Swim, which you can find on cable and satellite. Just go open for where is available to you on cable and satellite, either usually prime time and overnight, and in some cases, 24/7 service. Go to www.adultswim.com. That's www.adultswim.com or max.com. max.com. Next episode of second season of Teenage Euthanasia, next Wednesday at midnight Eastern and Pacific time. Alyssa Nutting, Allison Levy, thank you both very much for joining us. Congratulations on season 2, and like you said, many, many more in the hopper.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And yeah, We just found out it's at 9 a.m. On Thursday mornings on Mac. So you can have it with your coffee. Thank you for having us.
Right, it's
bye.
A pleasure, both of you. Take care. Enjoy the rest of the week.
You too.
Alyssa Nutting and Allison Levy joining us live from Los Angeles and New York, respectively, here on Tamabi Televised. When we come back, the sister of the star of This Fool, which premieres its second season tomorrow on Hulu, will join us. Rocio Estrada. She does make it a family affair because she is the lead costume designer of the program, and she will join us live from L.A. after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching nearly 90 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, Successful Women Radio is a regular attraction here at BTR, and the next episode is Monday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific. And the episode's going to deal with summer business and how you can make it better. Successful Women Radio, Monday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, Best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tamabi Televised on this Thursday afternoon, the 27th of July, 2023. Sam with you live from New York, 95 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Another great guest coming away in the half hour ahead, plus our classic trivia question of the week, too. So stay tuned for that. It's still in play as the week is almost coming to a close. If you have your comments for our next guest, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. One of Hulu's big comedy surprises last year was a show out of South Central L.A. called This Fool. It stars the brilliant comedian, writer, and actor Chris Estrada, and as it turned out, it's become a family affair. My next guest is not only the lead costume designer of the program, she's Chris's sister, and her name is Rocio Estrada, and she joins us right now from Los Angeles. Hi, Rocio.
Hi, how are you?
Very fine, thank you. So how's the family getting together for Hulu starting season two tomorrow?
Oh, we're really excited. We can't wait.
And how is Chris and everybody else in the family?
No, really good. We're all just super jazzed, and we hope people love it. I know he's a little bummed because he can't really promote it right now, but, you know,
nope,
he has to support his unions, yeah.
And we're happy you're here. So tell us about This Fool. How did both of you get involved? Did you both get involved in season one, or is this a case where you came in for season two?
Actually, from the beginning. So Chris hooked up with these guys from Comedy Central's corporate, and they're all comedians and writers, and the guys from Comedy Central had their own show called Corporate. So they got together and developed this idea that my brother had and started pitching it to different – they got Fred Armisen attached to it and then started pitching it to different network – one, different studios. And then Hulu, was the one that got the acquired the show. And then I interviewed for the costume designer job. So that was really exciting. And we had already talked a lot about how Chris envisioned the show and what he thought it should, visually look like. So it was really cool. And it was also really cool because it was a little easy in the sense that, like, a lot of the episodes are loosely based on his life or characters or, like, characters from our family. So I drew a lot of inspiration from that. And it was just very neat to work alongside my brother for both seasons.
And how much of the source material came out of your experiences by yourself, with your family, living in South Central L.A.?
It was cool because a lot of the characters, like the mom, is very similar to my mom, the grandma. Just a lot of cultural pieces in there, or just the neighborhood, the neighbors. When I would read the scripts, like prior to prep, I would laugh because a lot of it, I was like, oh, I know. When they would introduce a character, I knew who he was talking about. Like in real life, I was like, oh, that's his friend from childhood. So I was. It was very neat in that way.
So in your role as the lead costume designer on This Fool, what do you look out for? How do you prepare how an episode is going to look from the clothes that Chris and everybody wears?
Yes. Well, we first started with mood boards. I present to the creators, to Chris and the other creators, mood boards of each character, and we really talked about like keeping it very authentic and rooted, and that the characters seem approachable, that it was attainable, that you saw that these are working class people wearing, you know, regular clothes. We weren't going to have the mom be wearing expensive clothes because that wouldn't be realistic to where she's at in, you know, in life.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done
costume work for television before?
Yes. I've worked prior to this Fool, I worked at Jimmy Kimmel Live. I'm one of the costumers there. I'm not the costume designer, but I'm one of the costumers, and they have a bunch of experience on film working as a costumer. So I've been working in costumes for close to 20 years now.
Mm. You know, many years ago, we had Sonia Nahn, who was the Emmy-winning costume designer for So You Think You Can Dance. And one of the things she told us is that one of the designs that helped her win the Emmy was one that she literally had to switch at the spur of the moment. It was in a sequence dealing with breast cancer. And because of a situation that happened, and this was in the middle of the live show, that she literally had to switch had to change the costume, change the design, boom, and then make it fly, and it did. Has that kind of thing happened to you as well, either last year with the first season or this year with the second season, where you've had to, this is not working, I got to switch something on the fly?
Yes, a little. Yes. Second season, we had a couple months ago, there was all these storms, and it was just raining nonstop, and we had this big Hootenanny scene in the desert. And we had all these people dressed up in like desert attire, but they like desert rats, and it just wasn't realistic to what the weather was going to be like. And you know, you panic because you don't want. And then there was going to be musicians, and you don't want people to feel uncomfortable or just to be miserable while shooting, because then that's not fun. So then we had to quickly rally and re-pull everything, but just shift it to more for it to be weather conducive. And then, you know, it's like little things like that. Or for season one with the dinosaur, when Luis wore the dinosaur costume when he in group therapy, you know, we had to make sure that the fan that was inside the costume that made it blow up didn't interfere with sound. And then you had to, like, worry about keeping the air in so it stayed fluffy. So we had to add elastic and just tweak it. So it's like a lot of those last minute things, but I definitely have shared experiences like the one with the costume designer from So You Think You Can Dance, especially in live television. Like, I know that at Jimmy Kimmel Live, a lot of times like mishaps happen last minute, or you know, something rips or something pops. Luckily on this Fool, things were fairly tame and there was no real like crisis except for the desert, because we just had to reshift, but everything looked great, and I kind of even think they look better, so I'm excited to see it.
This Fool, one of television's unique sleeper hits from last year, is back tomorrow for its second season on Hulu, available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. And we're talking with the sister of the star, the creator, and the executive producer of the series, Chris Estrada. That's Rocio Estrada, and she's involved as the lead costume designer on the program. She joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on a Thursday afternoon, a very hot one here in not just in New York, but around the country here this afternoon on Smart TV Televised. Happy you're with us along for the ride, nationwide or worldwide, wherever you are. Simon Avon with you live from New York. 95 degrees after the bottom of the hour. Let's hear from you. Make a call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name, our wonderful friend Duck Northwest Media, with his great yellow thumbs up. He's already in the chat room, and join him, and sooner you do, sooner we get to know where you're at. And don't forget, tomorrow we have another great hour to wrap up the week for you. We'll have the co-director and the co-subject of a very interesting HBO documentary miniseries called Telemarketers. And if you or someone you know is dealing with telemarketing people, and I do deal with them, and believe me, I can smell a scam. Hope you do too. You'll be very interested in our lead guest. His name is Sam Litman Stern, and he happened to have been a former telemarketer. And like I said, he's the co-director of this documentary series, which premieres next month on HBO. He's also a co-subject. Wait till you hear him. I really think you're going to get a big, big, big insight from what he has to say about his former role. He's also a former writer on Vice and Rolling Stone magazine. Sam Litman Smith, co-director of Telemarketers, coming to HBO next month. He's our lead guest. Also, as said before, you'll meet the co-founders of the animation Cutting Edge Studio, Toon Star, John Anasio and Louisa Wang. They are doing some very interesting new TV animated series, including one that may also include a very interesting artificial intelligence-powered video game on television. They're all with us tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What surprised both of you about the reaction last year to This Fool and how well it did on Hulu?
You know, it's always so shocking because you don't want you don't want it to be a niche show where only, like, Latinos are watching. Like, it was really important, I know, to the creators and to Chris that the show was approachable and that, you know, people can relate of all walks of life. And I think it did attain that because who hasn't gone through a breakup or who isn't, like, in their 30s and in a crossroad of, like, what to do with their life? And I do think that they also touched on a lot of social issues, but they did it in a way that was it didn't feel overly woke or preachy or like, hey, you have to learn this. It was all very much rooted in comedy. So it's been a pleasant experience to see how well it's received from, like, all walks of life.
Mm-hmm. And what was it like, by the way, to be involved in a show which had a large Latino cast? Your brother is the star, the writer, the key executive producer. He's also got people like Fred Armiston and Jonathan Groff behind him as fellow executive producers, and a studio like ABC Signature. What's it like to have that kind of environment to do your thing?
Oh, gosh, just amazing. And you know what? Everyone was super supportive. There wasn't, any real pushback. Like, I think ABC Signature seemed really excited. Fred Armiston was really excited, and it was so lovely when he was in season one, and he was such a quirky character. So it was just, I just think it's been very seamless. It's just been an amazing experience, and there's been a lot of support.
It is something, Rocio, that doesn't get asked about when it comes to costume design on television. How does that job impact other jobs like cinematography and film editing and set design and production design? How does what you do impact all these other roles? How do you weave yourself through all of those roles and your role?
Oh my gosh, it's so intertwined. As a matter of fact, I just remembered something in season one when I remember for the pilot, I put Minister Payne in a sweater, and I don't think I had quite gotten the pictures yet from the set design of the Hugs Not Thugs. Then when I realized it the day of was that they were very close in tone. Like, he was Minister Payne was in, like, a reddish sweater, and the chair was red. And, you know, for a second I panicked, but those are kind of things where, you know, you work together and then you easily tweak it, you change it. But it's all very much intertwined. You have to think about fabric, if it makes noise, and, like, what kind of noise is likely to get picked up on a microphone. There was also this Dodger pullover that's in season two that, we kept testing it, and we're like, is it noisy? Is it not? It seemed like it would be okay, but then it was a little sensitive for the mic. So it's just like all those things you have to think about. Or if things start to strobe, if you pick a pattern that has too much design or squiggles or lines, sometimes it just morays on camera and it doesn't look great, or it then becomes distracting. So you really do have to pay attention to texture, design, those type of elements, so that it, you know, all the departments work well and then everyone shines and no one's feeling like they have to problem solve because maybe something becomes problematic.
You just raised the point. How much does lighting impact the kind of costumes or how you design your costumes?
oh my gosh, lighting so much, because a lot of times, you know, you have to think about the actor's skin tone and will certain colors wash them off, like, you know, wash their complexion off, or if you, or if somebody, you just have to think about skin color and how fabric looks against their skin, but also like how that bounces off with light, because sometimes, you know, you might have something that you think might be too dull in color, but then with the lighting, it can make all the difference in the world, or it can negatively impact the person's appearance. So you really have to think about that. That was another thing that we had to think about, because for second season, we were in sound stages, and there was a lot of green screen, and for where the horizon was, or where, like, the sunset, and sometimes we had to think about, like, you know, when we were shooting those type of scenes, not to have any green, because then it might, you know, it starts to blur in. So, and how that also impacts with the lighting, is it going to blow it out?
How did you decide that costume design was going to be your forte in television and film?
Well, you know, I actually I didn't have any contacts when I was young. I didn't know anybody that worked in film or television. It just seemed so interesting to me. And I applied for a nonprofit program called Inner City Filmmakers in Los Angeles. And that program, you know, you applied and you got a scholarship, and they took in high school graduates and went, had them go through like a little film boot camp per se. And they had a lot of working professionals come and talk to the students. And I was a member of one of the program, and someone from costumes came and talked to us, and I just was so fascinated by it that I thought to myself, wow, I really want to do this. So when I was in college, I kept in touch with the program, and they asked me if I wanted to become an intern for a kids' film. It was actually Beethoven 3. A lot of people don't know, but there was a 3 hit. And I was their intern, and then when I finished college, I kept in touch with the program, asked them if they had if they knew of any opportunities to work as a production assistant. And that's kind of what got me in the door. I started working as a production assistant for the costume department of, you know, some pretty cool films.
Rocio Estrada is our guest this half hour of Tawambi Televised, coming away live from Los Angeles. She is lead costume designer on This Fool, the sleeper hit on Hulu that's back for season 2 tomorrow through smart TV sets, device, and multi-channel bundles. And she is also, in addition to her role on that program, the sister of the star and creator and executive producer of the series, Chris Estrada. And we'll have more from Rocio in a moment. Plus, we'll have our classic trivia question. Stand by, because you could be winning a Chicago Greatest Hits CD and an Uber card courtesy of AMC Network. So stay tuned for that. And if a question or comment or any minutes with Rocio, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, Cruel Summers executive producer and showrunner Ellie Treden will be with us. That series wraps up its second season Monday night. And next Friday, we'll be joining you at a special time, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. And one of our guests will be, Reset from Tomorrow, the head of Southside Studios in Dallas, Texas, Stephen Demier. And don't forget, our big anniversary episode, 2 hours, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern, noon to 2 Pacific. That's the following Monday, August 7th, with Brad Schwartz, the former vice president at the CW, former head of Pop TV, will be our first hour guest. When you're on or off the set with Chris, does he ever take you aside and, like, try a scene out on you, have you get into a character and bounce, like, a way he plays a scene off, or he plays a particular line of dialogue on you?
You know what? I think he's pretty shy about that kind of stuff. I know that I would see him walk away and, you know, practice on his own. I think he takes it, well, you know, because he's new to it, so he takes it really seriously, and I do think he's a little shy about it. I don't think he's going to ask me to read lines with him anytime soon, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. How much time do you spend on the set, both of you time together?
Pardon me? You mean how much time Chris and I both spend on set?
Yeah.
Or I? Oh, no, we're there all day. I mean, sometimes I would get there before he did, because, you know, you have to, like, prep stuff. But, I mean, we're literally there all day, because I stay till everything gets established. So we do, you know, it's kind of funny, because sometimes don't see him that often. And then when we're shooting, I see him every day, all day. And we're, you know, it's nice.
to have a conversation and see how he's feeling about stuff. And I will say he's very hands-on. So he definitely has a lot of notes, opinions, you know, about wardrobe, about costumes. And, you know, he just really wants the show to look cool and grounded and different.
And when filming is done or taping is done for the day, he, you know, is he able to, like, turn that work off and turn on, hey, I'm a member of a family, you know, he's your brother, so on and so forth?
Yeah, I think so. You know what was funny? One of the season two, there was this one time when we were shooting and we were on set and I had forgotten to take my set chair because I come in and stay established and then I'll go back to the department and we start, you know, working ahead. But that particular day, I was really excited for one of the guest stars and I knew it was his last day, so I wanted to say goodbye. So I stayed there longer and I was there, so I saw his chair and I sat there, and then over the corner of my eye, I could see the prop master and one of the prop person looking at me, and then my brother comes up and starts talking to me, and we're having this conversation while I'm sitting, and then I could see them staring more, and then I finally realized that we hadn't told anybody that we were related. So some people knew and some people didn't, and I think that they were just like appalled. They probably So I started laughing. I'm like, he's my brother. I'm not taking this chair. Because I think they thought that I was just like, you know, being inconsiderate and taking the actor's chair. So that was kind of nice. We tried, you know, some people didn't know we were related and some people did. And I like that because I didn't want it all, you know, I don't want people to think that I'm getting special treatment or anything like that just because we're related. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you still have a job to do and you want to take pride in your job, and you want everyone to be happy with your work.
At the end of season one, Chris's character loses his job. He loses his romance life. He's sort of at a, you know, big turning point in his life. What can we expect out of season two?
Well, season two, I feel like the focal point is really depression. I mean, he's really going through some dark times. He's very depressed, and I think his wardrobe definitely reflects that. He's still wearing his punk t-shirts because he's very much like a punk music fan, but they're a lot darker and sadder. I will say it's a lot more pessimistic in terms of his outlook, and then there's the shift mid-season, and he starts to, you know, get back on track and get hopeful, and he, you know, really come to terms that with that some of his decisions that he is making are the right ones, like maybe, you know, breaking up with Maggie, starting all over, and he really takes more ownership of his, like, mental health and his life. But you see the slow transition throughout the series, so I think that's pretty neat. And you see it, it's very reflective in his wardrobe. Like, there's one scene where he's using a sledgehammer and he's breaking into a wall, and, you know, he has a very a punk shirt that is very much reflective of his mood. And then there was another scene where they were in the desert and he had a Rage Against the Machine t-shirt, which I thought was pretty neat because they were definitely raging.
Jay Clark's Novelty, by the way, just joined us. If you have a question or comment, get it in the chat room quickly or make the call, 646-652-2906. Has Chris suggested how long he wants to do this pool?
Gosh, I don't, you know, I think that they are so, Chris and all the creators and the three other creators, it just gets so, you know, focused on the season that they are on, but I don't know if they, you know, think, be like, have the next storyline. They think that they are just so, like, focused on making that season right, but I just really don't see how they wouldn't get a season three. Season two is so good. I mean, season one was good, but season two really, you know, knocks it out.
Mm-hmm. This Fool, starring Chris Estrada, along with Frankie Quinones, Laura Padalano, Michelle Ortiz, Julia Vera, and Michael Imperioli. Season two begins tomorrow on Hulu, available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. More details about the service online, go to Hulu.com, HULU.com. That's This Fool, season two, starting tomorrow on Hulu. Rocio Estrada, thank you very, very much for coming on. Congratulations to you and Chris and everybody on getting the second season and hopefully much, much more in stock. And we really appreciate you coming on board.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much. And I hope everyone loves it. It's really funny. I think it'll be well received.
Have a good feeling it will be, Rocio. Thank you again. Take care. Enjoy the rest of the week and the weekend.
Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Rocio Estrada joining us live from Los Angeles again. This Fool Season 2 begins tomorrow on Hulu. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. It's our next last time we're offering it on the program. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win an Uber card provided by AMC Network and a Chicago Greatest Hits CD. Here's the question. Name one of two 1950s TV drama series starring Reed Hadley, R-E-E-D-H-A-D-L-E-Y. One is a crime procedural. Another is a legal procedural. And you can see both series episodes on YouTube. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If we don't get a winner by the end today, post the question first thing tomorrow morning on Facebook and X, a.k.a. Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X/Twitter at UBC Simon TWT. One more time, the question, name one of two television series, 1950s TV drama series starring Reed Hadley. Again, both shows, episodes are on YouTube. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. If you're a previous winner or a guest in this program, you are not eligible. Get your trivia TV smarts going today, and all the very best. Thanks to all of our guests for being here and all of you for tuning in. Remember, coming your way on Friday, again, if you've been involved with telemarketers, know someone who has, do not miss the first segment of tomorrow's program, where we will have the co-director of the new HBO documentary miniseries during next month, Telemarketers, Sam Litman Stern, a former telemarketer himself. Plus, from the new animation studio Toon Star, co-founders John Ignacio and Louisa Wang. And next Monday, Ellie Friedman, the executive producer and showrunner of Cruel Summer, the freeform hit that goes into its second season finale Monday night. And next Friday, special time, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, one of our guests will be the head of Southside Studios in Dallas, Stephen Demier. And then, of course, our big anniversary episode the following Monday with Brad Schwartz, former vice president of CW, our first our guest. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And check out our podcast available 24/7 on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, on Apple and Google Podcasts, Zencaster's Creators Network, Spotify, and other great podcast locations, as well as our wonderful website, Tomorrow Be Televised from On Podium. And remember, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about our guest today? What's your thoughts for where TV is at and where it's going? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, X, Twitter. And however you respond with me, I respond back to you within 24 hours because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. They are not say those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is Beat Yard General Manager, Jay Sonnenberg, Head of Content. Website serves by On Podium, the Internet's great podcast outpost. The Star of Vegas is our web coordinator. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. We'll be back tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and all of our podcasts and web destinations. Whatever you're doing now and then, if you're particularly in an area of a heat wave, please take it easy. If you have to travel, check with your airline or train carrier before you do so. Drink plenty of fluids. Take your time going to where you need to go. Check in on your loved ones. And whatever you do, please make it safe and make it great so you can be back here with us tomorrow afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.